You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 23rd of March, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at Radio Aryan. I am joined today by the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Well, I've had an old back problem flamed up this week and a couple of death threats, but other than that, everything's fine.
I'm sure those death threats must bounce off you like water off a duck's back by now, Dennis. A duck's back, yeah. Well, how are you feeling today then? You're feeling better? I know you contacted me yesterday and said you were feeling a bit better.
Well, I'm okay. Well, yesterday the problem where if I moved slightly, as I'm sat even, I would have come out with four-letter word without thinking, but today I'm all right.
Well, I hope you sat there nice and comfortable for tonight's podcast. And I noticed that you brought out a new video this week. Is that a trailer for the new documentary series or something like that, was it?
Well, no, it was banned off YouTube. And so I just linked up another short 30-second video with the link to BitTube where I'm slowly uploading all the material in case, YouTube decide to take a more aggressive stand against me.
Yeah, quite a few people seem to be using BitTube and there's PewTube as well. Yeah. We've got to have these backups. What I did notice was that there was loads of comments on there. Lots of comments.
Yeah, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, so some good ones. So again, what we've got today, we've got a list of comments just taken from that, which are on a variety of subjects. And the first one comes from somebody calling themselves Technological Matrix 2045. And what he's basically arguing is that because we have immigration into Europe from other European countries, such as in Britain, we have immigration into Britain from Poles and Romanians and Bulgarians. Because of that, it must be completely fine to have non-white immigration. And this is this is quite a common argument that we hear, but just because we have European immigration, it doesn't mean to say we can have non-white immigration as well. Just because, you have cats and dogs in your home, it doesn't mean to say that you want crocodiles and lions in your home as well. It's not a logical argument. And he comes out with quite a few statistics to try and prove this. And when you check out his statistics, they're not actually true. And he's got one there, and this is quoting him. It says, Finland has a population of about 5,518,371 and only 1,000 migrants, according to some statistics. And the immigration ethnic groups that are coming into Finland are from Estonia and Russia. And that's complete BS. And just looking up on Wikipedia, you will see that Finland has 16,721 Somalians. And it's going up by 10% every year. And that was back there in 2014. So that's going to be about 20,000 by now already. And it's going to be increasing. And what the hell are Somalians doing in Finland? In the Scandinavian north? Or the far north? It's even further north than Scandinavia. And you've got these equatorial Somalians there. Nonsense. And to say the immigration is coming in from Estonia and Russia, well, that wouldn't matter. Estonia is just the country next door. They're the same, pretty much the same people. It's the same with the Russians, the same ethnicity. It's not really going to destroy their genome by Estonians and Russians going in there, but it is going to destroy them Somalians going in there, breeding with them. I don't know where this guy gets his ideas from. What do you think of this guy? Because he's made lots of comments on there, Dennis. He was having quite a go, wasn't he?
Well, first of all, I mean, his name, Technological Matrix 2045. If he knows anything about immigration, he'll know by 2040, Ireland will have another million migrants. And I watched an actual video on Ireland, and it showed how the media over there was not reporting it. And this is goes across the board, obviously. And it actually shows in Dublin that they're having problems in the suburbs. They're having problems now with these African gangs. And when the bad weather was on, the snow and everything, they actually rammed, I don't know where they got it from, but they rammed the JCB digger into a supermarket and looted the complete place and wasn't reported. And there's several gangs, which the guy showed photographs of, and these were obviously Somalians. And if you know anything about Somalians and Somalia, it's not a place anybody go for a holiday, that's for sure. And they're just importing them in without thought. So consequently, I mean, it's the same in Europe. There's no difference. These Somalians are going in there, you know, raping women. And we saw the Tommy Robinson incident last week, and when he brought up the fact that there was an Italian reporter raped live on TV. It just doesn't get any lower.
Yeah, again, that was Somalians in Italy. You're talking about Somalians in Ireland, and this guy in his comment, he's talking about them in Finland. And I thought he must be German, because the main thrust of his comments seemed to be Germany. But yeah, that Ireland 2045, that is a project that the Irish government has to bring in 1 million foreigners by 2045.
Yeah. More, yeah.
More than that, and you know, I mean, that's going to replace 25% of the population in Ireland. But not only that, they've bribed the newspapers to only produce positive news reports of immigrants. They've given them lots of money and said,
"That's right,
yeah, don't print anything." Puts them in a bad light.
Sorry, I was just going to say that stems from the Barcelona agreement. Sorry, go on.
Well, what was the Barcelona agreement?
Well, that was a series of nations in Europe, the governments in Europe, agreeing with a certain amount of Arab nations and Israel for the allowance of all this immigration, and they'll bend over backwards to make sure that the migrants are looked after, which is the reason why, you know, Germans were getting kicked out of their houses and why they instantly get the benefits, and numerous other reasons which people are puzzled about, and the press, the media, was actually involved in that as well, to keep things on their apps.
Yeah, this is why they didn't show any news of that digger going into the Lidl.
Yeah,
they got serious problems with Negro gangs over there in Ireland, and the police can't do anything, because if they do, they're frightened that the Negroes are going to riot. So they basically got a license to do whatever they like. And in one area, a biker gang had to step in and try and clean the place up, because the police are just refusing to. And it's very worrying what's happening in Ireland. But in Finland, apparently, they've got the Somalians there. That's the biggest immigrant community that they have in Finland, is Somalians.
Oh.
I mean, that's I just find that so bizarre. Black faces in the middle of the snow. I
mean, they're vicious. They really are vicious.
Yeah, yeah. This guy, getting back to this guy's comments, I mean, he claims that non-white immigrants coming to Britain are just there to study, and they leave after 6 months. And you just think, well, why is London, the capital city of Britain, 60% non-white then? Is that all students? No, of course it's not. And what about the issues with the fake colleges and fake students and fake student visas? I mean, there's been a huge investigation into it that got rid of half these fake colleges that these people were supposedly coming here for, with their fake student visas. I think this guy is, either he's been fed a load of rubbish and he's fallen for it, or he's deliberately putting out false information. This is another quote from him. "But Germany is often shown to deal with massive amounts of immigration, right? Well, no. Actually, it is less than 5% from the year 2000 to 2017, according to the latest statistics." Well, that might be true. It might be 5% from the year 2000 to 2017. But in the year 2016, there was 1 million foreigners brought in by Merkel. If they were to do the statistics from 2017 to 2018, you would see that it's probably more like 20% or 25%. But because they stretch it out over 17 years, you know, it's going to come out with less. That's called massaging the statistics.
Well, what people have to realise, that all governments are complicit in this. And I'll give you a prime example with Britain. Yesterday, obviously, they need a new passport, a new colour of passport. Instead of giving it to a British company, they give it to a French company. And the British company now has to lay off a number of workers, a couple of hundred, I think. And the deal was worth millions. But yet they handed it to a French company, which shows where the loyalty of these elite and MPs all stand. And I'm not even convinced about this excuse about the police being called racist. I honestly think it's the policy, and they're told what to do and not what to do, and they take orders.
Definitely, definitely. It's not just that. They are just following orders. And they are told that it's more important to go after people criticising Muslims than it is to go after rapists. Yeah, well, I heard about this passport thing as well. And the excuse they gave was, well, this passport company is going to be doing it cheaper than the British companies. So we've actually saved Britain some money by getting a foreign company to make it. No, that's all back to front. You know, we need British people working so that they have jobs, so that the money that's paid out for it goes back into the British economy. So it doesn't matter what it costs.
Yeah, you're right.
It doesn't matter, does it?
No, you can see with the loyalty lines, and it's not with the UK.
Yeah, you know, we'll say, okay, well, it costs twice as much, say, to get the British company to do it, but the money stays within Britain then. And that money is being spent on British families, and the wages go to the British guy, and he spends it on goods in the British shops, and it enters into the, you know, into the whatever it is, I forget the word, not currency, but general circulation, and it's for the good of, it's all for the good of Britain. So it doesn't really matter how much it costs if it stays within Britain.
Well, I'd say it is for the good of the white man in Britain, which is not in their interest.
Yeah, this is what I mean by, you know, they tell half truths. Yes, it is cheaper, but that's not the point, because the money's going out of Britain. And the same with the statistics when they say, oh yes, but it's only 5% between 2000 and 2017. But that's being dishonest with the information.
Well, there's a YouTube channel, Brit Girl, and she was talking about it, and she mentioned that Oprah Winfrey had actually said, like, you know, the world would be better off if we killed all the white men, which is probably quite true. I mean, I haven't seen a quote of that myself. But what she's missing is that's not just the agenda of Oprah Winfrey. That's the agenda of we know who.
It's the agenda of all of them, all of the elite, the establishment. I mean, there was I was watching a talk show today, and they had Maureen Lipman on there, and she was talking about some news story. I didn't quite catch what the news story was, but it was something about something bad happening in Britain. And she said, "Oh, and the study was done by white British, so we can just ignore that then." And she looked around for approval. You know, she felt so comfortable and brave being a Jew that she could just run down white people and everybody would go along there. And she also said that Donald Trump should be kneecapped. And you think, you imagine if any of us said that, you know, on Twitter, Maureen Lipman should be kneecapped. You know, we would be running a risk of, being told that we'd be making death threats. And yet she feels quite safe and comfortable and able to say that. Complete hypocrisy.
For a reason, yeah.
Yeah. Looking back at this, we got another quote from Technological Matrix here. He says, "So where is the genocide? Now let's look into the Muslim immigration. How much is there into Europe? According to the latest Pew Research Center survey, it is 4.9% Muslims in the European continent, with Germany at 6.1% Muslims in it." Well, okay, well, that sounds low, but any Muslims is too many. And the thing is that they're all located in one area. They take over one area. They move in with their friends and their relatives until they take that area over completely, like with London is now 60% non-white. And then you get an even bigger problem. You get the way that they're saying in France they're going to deal with this. And in France, they want to put a certain amount of refugees in every village in France. So instead of it being in one area that's going to suffer from miscegenation, they want miscegenation everywhere throughout France. They want to have brown people in every village to ensure that the DNA is completely ruined right the way throughout France. So it doesn't matter what percentage it is. You know, it still doesn't belong here, does it?
That's right. I can remember Sarkozy actually threatening to bring out stiffer laws if people didn't mix naturally. they said if they didn't, then they would force laws to make them mix. Doesn't quite any more blatant than that.
Yeah, well, that was his way to get rid of racism, wasn't it? Everyone's going to be mixed into a brown mess. Do you ever see anyone look so evil as Sarkozy?
No, I've got to be honest. He was a character.
He's like a gargoyle. He really does look like some kind of evil devil to me, looking at him. He's got such a wicked face. He's got quite an archetypal Jewish face as well. And finally, I've got another final quote from Technological Matrix. And this is a classic argument that these sort of people use. And he says, how many refugees in total are there in Germany compared to the millions of ethnic indigenous Germans in Germany? The answer is 240,000 compared to the ethnicity statistics here. So he's saying because we've got ethnic indigenous Germans in Germany, then it doesn't matter if we have other people in Germany. It's, you know, we had the same argument in Sweden. Somebody was saying about crimes that were committed. You know, the Muslims are committing crimes in Sweden. And the answer is, oh, yes, but ethnic Swedes commit crimes as well. So they try to cancel it out by that. And that's what he's saying here is he's saying, well, what does it matter if you've got refugees coming into Germany? You've got Germans in Germany. He's just saying, well, it's all people, so it doesn't matter. Yes. You know, all of these arguments don't, you know, they just melt when you actually look into the logic of it.
What he doesn't mention is the fact that Turkey is still negotiating to come into the EU, and that's 80 million Muslims. And if that does happen, and 80 million Muslims are allowed in, once they all get the passports, they can go wherever they want, any country, apart from obviously Poland and Hungary, I think, at the moment. That's a lot of Muslims coming in at one influx.
Oh, I look at the way they behave in Germany. You know, they don't say, oh, we're German citizens now. They agitate together as Turks. They've got Turkish biker gangs. They've got Turkish drug gangs. They hire out arenas so that they can all get together as Turkish nationalists. You've got Turkish politicians going there to speak to them. You know, they're obviously a fifth column that's working in Germany to try and take the place over, the same as they are in Holland. Do you remember a while back, Dennis, during an election, they had a Turkish politician that was going over to Holland to speak to all the Turks there, and they said, well, no, you can't. You know, this is your election in your country. What are you doing coming over here talking to our people?
Yeah, but I bet the left let him.
Well, I think they actually banned him, and then Erdogan called Holland, likened them to Nazis, didn't he? And Merkel as well. So he said Merkel is like a Nazi for not allowing them to come in and speak to the Turks. But
this thing from Nazi I've ever seen.
Yeah, funny Nazi Merkel. And this guy also sent you a couple of videos, Dennis. And he was trying to say that Adolf Hitler was a Freemason and he supported the Freemasons. And the first video, I mean, I haven't had a chance to watch them, but I know that you have. The first one I looked at, just the write-up, and it said the Masonic origins of the Aryan swastika. Well, Freemasonry hasn't been around for as long as the Aryan swastika has. I mean, the swastika's been around for, what, 5,000 years? Maybe longer than that. Freemasonry's been around for the last 500, if that. Okay, they claim origins of earlier than that. But the swastika has been around for a very, very long time. The fact that Masons use it, Masons use the cross as well. They use all symbols. Yeah, so that argument falls apart. There are no Masonic origins to the Aryan swastika. And in his other one, it says, an expose of an ironic situation in Nazi Germany. Despite closing down Masonic lodges and claiming antagonism towards Freemasonry, Hitler and the Nazis not only befriended many high-degreed Masons, but the entire premise of Nazism is grounded in Freemasonry. So what do you have to say to that, Dennis? And what was the video like?
Well, I skipped through the videos, to be honest, because they're not videos. I mean, I didn't have much time, but they're not videos that I enjoy watching. But, I mean, he said at one point, he said that even the way that Hitler died by committing suicide in the bunker was a pagan ritual. Well, to be honest, we're not even sure 100% how he died. We've got the official story, which may well be true. But we also Oren, the Christian guy who did the SWAT skirt on a couple of weeks ago, he said, Oren Petito, is it? He said something that the German, actual official report from the Germans was he died fighting in action, which, you know, for someone who has an Iron Cross and a baby of other medals, is not difficult to believe. And then there's a host of people who think that he actually escaped, which I don't. So even on that argument, there's no solid ground. And if I can just throw this in, just to completely annihilate his argument, I've got the last line here of a letter from Magda Goebbels, who says, "Goodbye, dear Harold. I think he's a brother. If we meet again, depends on God. If it is not to be, I will always be proud of having belonged to a family that even in adversity and up to the last moment has been faithful to the Führer and his pure and holy cause."
Amen to that.
You can't dig up any more proof on that, can you?
Do you mean to say, Dennis, that Adolf Hitler didn't die blindfolded with a noose around his neck and his trouser leg rolled up?
Well, some people could spin that one if they hear you.
Some bizarre Freemasonic ritual. I thought he shot himself in the head. That's what everyone said.
Well, that's the official verdict, and you know, who can disprove it? You know, it's not an easy task. But then, like we said, the official narrative from the German side on the day he died was that he was killed in action.
Well, it certainly wasn't a Freemasonic ritual anyway. It was the equivalent of a great glorious leader falling on his sword at the last minute, or like a captain of his ship waiting till the last minute and going down with his ship. Yeah, that's the honourable thing to do, isn't it? When all else is lost.
I mean, he told Paulus to shoot himself, which the guy didn't.
It was a noble thing. He did the honourable thing. I wouldn't say it suggested it was Freemasonic to do that. Well, yeah, let's move on to the next one. We've got John Cena. He says, "Have you thought of making a documentary on the reality of the Jewish religion by any chance? Documentaries such as Stephen Anderson's Marching to Zion are pretty good and give a good gist that Christianity is against the Jews, but I feel like it doesn't go too into depth with things like blood libel and other such things. I would be interested to know what your next project is." Well, I can understand that he feels that that doesn't go far enough. I mean, there are some really twisted things that go on with the Jewish religion. I think of things like ritual sacrifice. Just the circumcision itself involves pedophilic acts, and sometimes these babies have been known to contract herpes from the mohel. He slices the top of the penis off and then puts the baby's penis in his mouth. It's absolutely sickening. And this actual term blood libel, I find that really offensive, because it's never ever been shown to have been a libel. I mean, this Jewish ritual sacrifice where they would get Gentile children, drain them of blood, or kidnap the child, drain him of blood, so sometimes circumcise them, and they would save this blood up and dry it out into a powder and keep it in these leather pouches and then use it for magic potions. And they were found guilty in various courts, and they were the king's Jews. So it was very, very hard to get a case against them, because it's like having a case against, you know, somebody who's related to the king. And yet these Jews were found guilty, and not just in one country, but all over Europe. So that's not a libel, is it? Unless they're saying that our courts are all fraudulent and corrupt. And of course they weren't back then. They are now, but for the Jews, aren't they? Not the other way around. And calling it blood libel, I get offended at that.
Yeah, well, it's difficult because I get asked to do umpteen documentaries on umpteen different subjects, so it's difficult to say. I honestly can't say. I mean, there is documentaries out there which, you know, might at the Talmud, you know, give good information on the Talmud. Maybe I will. I honestly can't say. And I can never promise, because I have to be motivated by what I'm doing. And if I sit down and it starts to motivate me, then that could well happen.
Well, I think the problem with it is, if you say to people about Jewish ritual sacrifice, people just think, well, that's so shocking, it's unbelievable. isn't it? Yeah. They think it's just not likely to happen.
The good-natured people, most of Europeans, and don't delve into that dark side as easily as what these Jewish people, Talmudic Jews, do.
It's hard enough to convince people of what's actually said in the Talmud. But when you say, well, they were actually kidnapping, you know, European children, draining them of blood, crucifying them, and this is part of their Passover ritual, it's just too much for some people. Yet the proof of it is there. I mean, we've got countless saints that were made from these children. We've got folk songs that were written about it. Yeah. The Jews that were expelled from Britain in 1290, that was after little Sir Hugh of Lincoln was drained of blood, and that's just the case that we know about. If there were these cases that were tried in court, there must have been other ones that were not tried in court. And this was famous throughout Europe. And it hasn't stopped happening now. We had them happening in last century. I mean, we could do a whole program on that. Maybe it would be worth doing a video on it, Dennis.
But like I said, there's so much to be uncovered that it's difficult to say what I'm going to do next.
Well, we've got another question for you here. This one's from the Holocaust-denying Flat Earther. And he says, here's a question for Mr. Wise. What about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the Confessing Church? Why were they so opposed to Hitler? Did Hitler's government censor them? If so, why? If the Holocaust didn't happen, as I believe 100% that it did not, then why would someone as intelligent as Pastor Bonhoeffer oppose such a great movement as the National Socialist Movement? Was it purely because of the anti-Semitic legislation that they were passing? This is something that has troubled me quite a bit since discovering the truth about Hitler and the Holocaust. Well, Dennis, I must admit, I'm not sure who Dietrich Bonhoeffer is or who the Confessing Church is. So could you explain that a little bit first?
Well, from what I know, the Confessing Church was like a minority church, which obviously felt that National Socialism wasn't in their favour. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer was the leader of them. And consequently, I don't think he got anywhere. I think they just, eventually just dissolved. But certainly they didn't come under the banner of positive Christianity, which the National Socialists did promote. I think he was a paid shill, to be honest.
So he was in the opposing side. Yeah, he might well have been, I would say. I mean, if you saw all the positive improvements that were made by the National Socialists. And
so he was against that, then yeah. So what's wrong?
Yeah, well, didn't he build lots of churches as well? Hitler built lots of churches.
He opened a lot of churches, yeah. Well, sorry, yeah, he built a lot of churches, and he opened a lot of churches in Ukraine, as you know.
So you would think if he was honest, then he would have supported that, and instead he sided with the enemies of Germany.
Yeah.
So that's what category
he finding out he has plenty.
Next one, iPod King Carter. He says, Dennis, I remember you saying that Poland came into existence after World War I, but I thought Poland had existed for centuries. So what is it that you mean by that, Dennis, about Poland coming into existence after World War One and not existing before?
I think it was a period of a greater Poland, but the actual existence of Poland after World War One was when they got their independence, which they hadn't had for quite some time, apparently. And so we were talking about this last week, weren't we, about why did Poland gain so much out of a Treaty of Versailles? So they actually gained their independence as well. So, you know, the mystery thickens as why Poland was so well looked after.
I think there was a Grand Duchy of Lithuania, Poland, and Ukraine, and for some time that was actually run by Lithuania, but it was like a group of all three countries together. It was quite well advanced, and I think after World War One, the shape of Poland changed, and as you say, then they got their independence. So there's always been Poles, and the Poles had their area, but they may not have had a clearly delineated country and their own Polish king, I guess.
Yeah, it always puzzles me, Poland, it really does.
I know Michael Jones writes about it, and Poland and the Jews that were there, but I think it was considered as a part of Russia for quite some time.
Yeah.
Or part of Russia afterwards.
I saw somewhere at one point that somebody said that the Jews actually went to the ghettos quite willingly.
Well, that's in the news today, isn't it?
I thought it was somewhere.
Yeah, the Jews getting all angry about a Polish minister that said that the Jews went to the ghettos willingly and the Poles weren't responsible for any Polish death camps, which is quite true, and the Jews are furious about it. What they're furious about is the fact that there's a law saying that you can't blame Poles for anything that happened to the Jews during the war. And they're furious, saying, oh, you can't make laws on history. And it completely seems to have escaped their attention that that's exactly what they've been doing for the last 20 years with their Holocaust blasphemy laws. It's ridiculous.
That's right. And they enforce them.
It's earned them a fortune. I know that. Yeah. Absolute fortune. Well, that's part of it, isn't it? Poland doesn't want to be paying the Jews reparations like the rest of Europe has been.
Which probably would have come.
Yeah. So they've preempted that one, and the Jews are not happy about it. Next one is from the Truth Archive, and he says, anyone care to explain what the documentary is about? Apart from the obvious thing, I'm not sure what he means by that. Does it contain any game-changing information, like The Greatest Story Never Told and New World Order Communism by the Back Door? Well, you would expect it would, considering those are the only other two that you've made. I mean, logically, it's going to contain game-changing information. But do you want to summarise what the documentary has been about so far?
I remember this comment very well. And I actually said to him in a joking tone, you know, that's exactly what I do documentaries with game-changing information. But then he came back and he said, sounds to me like it's us Christians can do better than others, someone on them lines anyway. So then I went into an answer more serious, saying that even if I was a pagan right now, you would still be hearing exactly what you're seeing, because all I do is, well, I put on video the truth. It doesn't really matter, you know, if I'm a Muslim now, I'd still be saying the same. I'm not out to convert anybody. You know, if people don't want to be Christian, they don't want to be Christian in my house, fair enough. But as far as I'm concerned, at that period, Christianity was what it was, and people won't accept it for whatever reason, and they're denying the truth.
Well, the truth is the truth, isn't it? I mean, you can't pick and choose what it's going to be. And this is something I come across as well, Dennis. You know, I mean, you know, I'm Christian. I follow Christian identity, and we have a strict understanding of race and racial purity. And you'll get people saying, "Well, would you still be saying that if you were non-white? Would you still be saying that if you were part Jewish?" Well, of course, because it's the truth. It's facts. True. They don't change because of your point of view. That's what the truth is. You get the same thing, people saying, well, but would you be saying this about Christianity if you were a pagan? Well, yeah, because these are facts. And this is what I don't understand a lot of the time. You point facts out to people, and they'll just ignore them and continue on with the same worldview that they had, and they'll still promote the ideas that they had, even though you've shown that they were wrong, just because disagrees with them.
Yeah, well, that's like I said, it's a bit like, I think it was Yuri Brezhnev who said in an interview that you can show the left, you know, the absolute truth, take them to a gulag even, and they won't believe you. And it's pretty similar with these pagans.
Well, Hitler said as well, didn't he? He said about the Jews, when you're arguing with the Jews, and you know, you would win the argument, and then they'd come back the next day, and they'd just be arguing the same thing again, as if you'd never had the debate the day before, as if you'd never won the debate, and they'd just be back repeating the same nonsense. And that's the same sort of thing, I think. It is something that we need to work on, and we need, because it crops up a lot among nationalism.
Well, it's a serious subject, because, like I always say, if the Jews kind of allowed the world to know that they had just won the holy war against the Christians, would they find it as easy to carry on the genocide they're doing presently?
And when you think of the number of people that identify as Christian, if you think 60% of Britain identifies as Christian, I think it's 65 or 70% in America identify as Christian. And Christians are supposed to, you know, they're supposed to obey the Bible. They're supposed to believe the Bible. So if you can show them with the Bible that actually what they're being taught to do by their churches is wrong, what we're being taught to do by the state is wrong, then I think a lot of them, you know, would come to our side. They'd have no option to, otherwise they would be disobeying God. And a lot of them take it very, very seriously what they do. It's just that they've been taught the wrong thing by the churches, and they don't actually read their Bibles. They just read one verse at a time, a lot of them, totally out of context. They read the same verse over and over again instead of, you know, reading a whole book and understanding what's actually in there. And that's what you should be doing if you're a Christian. You should be reading it, all of it.
Well, I actually come from the angle of hearing the story, like I said, from my father. And I know what the religious side of World War II meant to him. I mean, he escaped Europe and this communist purge, and he put it down to a picture of St. Anthony in his wallet. And when he died, and knew what that meant to him, I mean, obviously, by that time, the picture had disappeared. And so I went to great lengths to try and find a picture of St. Anthony to put in a coffin with him. And that, you would not believe the extent that I had to go to find one. But I eventually found one. It was more difficult than I thought. And I put it in the coffin with him. That is the kind of extent that the religion fever in Europe that time, with the communists coming, would have meant to him. You know, I mean, there's no doubt about it. And people in America don't seem to realise this. Some people even in Europe don't realise this, that to be Christian in Europe at that time with the communists coming was kind of gathering of all the nations and ready to fight them. And Hitler was ready to fight them, took the Christian nations into the Soviet Union to try and take them down.
And your information comes firsthand, comes from someone who was there. You know, yes. That's a big difference as well. That people don't get. No. Next up, another comment here. This is from Gendermans. We are all businessmen. And he says, where can I find the weekly podcast? Because I was always checking them in your playlist and they're all gone. Well, that's because YouTube often remove the accounts that upload our podcast. But if you go to radioarian.com.
Faster than I can put them up, to be honest.
Yeah, radioarian.com, they will always be there because we don't use YouTube as our main outlet, but there are people that upload them for us. I won't say the names of the channels on here, but there are two channels at the moment that are uploading our stuff, and you should be able to find them if you search for it. And if you can find one copy of one of our Radio Aryan podcasts, then just save that channel, because the likelihood is that all the rest of them will appear there as well. And also, I like them and put them as saved podcasts on the channel that I do have, and I'm not going to say the name of that one here either, but you should be able to
BitTube is a perfect idea for that, isn't it? Just link it. I think that's what I'll do.
BitTube is, anyone that wants to put them up on BitTube, please do. We want this stuff to get out, and we want it to be on as many platforms as possible. And, you know, I haven't got the time to upload it all. But anyone else that wants to do that, then please do.
I mean, the safer bet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's public property. You know, once we make a podcast and put it out there, it's not really our property then. It's everyone else's. You know, that's why we do it, for the listeners. Moving on, we've got another one from the Holocaust-denying Flat Earther. And he says, hey, Dennis, have you heard that the Bolsheviks closed down all the Masonic lodges in Russia after they took power? Is this true? If so, why would they do that? Why is that, Dennis? What happened there?
Interesting this, yeah. I looked into this in Communism by the Back Door, and I actually found out that he did close some Masonic lodges down, but he didn't close the ones which were Western Jewish down.
So he got rid of some, but he kept some up.
Yeah, well, the ones which, obviously, you know, is funded from the West. Well, he had Jews over there from the West. and the ones what they had the Masonic halls, he didn't shut them down.
Well, I remember seeing Duralina. I'm trying to remember the name of his documentary, In the Shadow of Hermes, or something like that. And a lot of that is to do with the Masonic influence in communism. So,
yeah, well, I actually had an email with him to check on things, and I asked him if Stalin was a Freemason, which I was strongly believing he was, and he said he wasn't, because he actually did shut down these Masonic lodges. But like I said, I later found that he didn't shut all the lodges down.
And I would say that Stalin wasn't the guy at the top. He was just the front
manager.
He was just the one working for the banks.
Unless Schiff had a bit of a lightning strike of charity to hand the complete country over to him, which is unlikely.
Then maybe that was just, you know, maybe some kind of a cover. Well, we'll get rid of the Freemasonic temples, because they certainly didn't get rid of the synagogues. They built synagogues.
No, he did turn on the Jews at the end, but then, you know, they actually poisoned him. And there's some evidence I was looking at a couple of weeks ago, bearing in mind in the series, that Churchill had something to do with it.
Some of the Jews he got rid of, but he didn't get rid of all of them. I mean, this was a thing at the time. They were saying, Stalin's regime is anti-Semitic. But yeah, he got rid of some Jews, but he replaced them with other Jews.
So yeah, I'm talking at the back end when he was a bit of a maverick.
Yeah, and you can't really say someone is anti-Semitic when he's got Jewish mistresses, Jewish wives, and
breakfast tables totally Jewish.
Yeah, and all the people there in the important roles who weren't Jewish had Jewish wives. So it was all connected in with that. Well, let's move on to the next comment. This is from Lee Boy. He says, good evening. Can you explain to me who financed Hitler? Many say it was the Rothschilds. Others say they were the Swiss bankers, but Hitler was obviously financed by someone. Is there any video explaining this? Congratulations on your channel. So how was Hitler financed, Dennis?
Well, again, this is another probably a theme for a video again. He was financed by the likes of Ford, who hated the Jews and communism. And you can assume that there were other industrialists in America thinking on the same lines as Ford. So that's quite possible there. I have no argument with that. I would put my last pound on the Vatican at some point would have funded him because of the fear they had for communism, and they would have done everything they could to help the National Socialists defeat communism. So I take that as a given. And then obviously people used to pay to go watch him speak. And if he went on a tour, he quite easily raised $500,000 Deutschmarks, you know, in a week, a tour.
Well, he used to live quite frugally as well. And once he was in power, he gave all the wages away, didn't he? And just lived on the profits from his book.
Yeah, he did,
from Mein Kampf.
Well, he was a rich man from his book.
But when you think about it, you know, Germany was facing this threat from communism. So if you are an industrialist and if you've got lots of money, you're going to be worried about what's going to happen. If the communists take over, they're going to take everyone's property. So you're going to be funding the guy who is most against the communists. And I dare say, among that group of industrialists, there may have been some Jews. There may have been some that weren't good to their workers, but they were going to be desperate to get rid of the communists. So they were going to give the money to Hitler. But once he got into power, that was it. We can see the laws that he had against the Jews. We can see the way that he worked against the Rothschilds. We can see what he did with some of them, taking their property. And the one in France got turned into a labour exchange. One of them was put in camps, I think, and we dealt with that last week. They made the films exposing the Rothschilds. So on the way up to power, he would have just taken money wherever he could get it, but it certainly didn't get any special favours for Rothschilds or Jews once he was in power.
No, I mean, that's just to mislead people and keep people from investigating. But another thing that just sprung to mind, actually, remember the book Communism in Germany, which you did a podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it actually says in there that once they defeated communism after World War One in the street battles, that the Germans felt they were defending Christian Europe.
Well, they were defending Christian Europe.
Try to tell that bit.
Well, this comes into the next comment, doesn't it? This is Ishmael Ibn Hafiz. And he says, "Dear Dennis, my compliments on your work, but how do you debunk this specific lad and his facts that Hitler was pagan and working against the church and Christianity?" And then he links to a video which is all in Russian or Czech. I didn't quite understand
that. Yeah. I think you answered it. Another one, yeah. Well, I'll just briefly say, at one point he said that he mentioned the Golden Dawn at one point. Now, he said they weren't Christian. I weren't convinced about that. I'd have to check up on that one, but I'm not totally
Golden
convinced.
Golden Dawn are. They're Christian. They have Orthodox priests at their rallies and all the rest of it.
Well, he said at one point that the pagans had surrendered many times to religion. Well, he's got to ask himself why. And, at the end of the day, the SS were based on the Teutonic Knights, who for hundreds of years have been fighting to keep Europe Christian. So, I can't understand what has European paganism ever done to keep anybody out? It's news to me.
It hasn't. And I found his next comment rather interesting. He says, "Dennis Wise, any thoughts, Dennis, about the SS Norwegian Antichrist anthem of the 45th second?" And he links to Par Vikingtog. It's a brilliant tune, a really, really good tune. I've heard it before. And it being sung by a choir. And I thought, well, I'll just have a look at what the lyrics are with Google Translate to see if this is an Antichrist anthem. And there's nothing Antichrist in it at all. It says, "On a Viking trip to a foreign country, men left Nordic lands. On the king's ship, they stood man by man. Of herd and battle, they were prepared. To Groningen and Iceland and Jutland went on a long ship to the west. And in France, Ireland and England, the Norwegian was an innocent guest." I dare say that's, a little bit of a in-joke there. And it says, "Yes, the enemy, they got fed up. Even the Pope lost his power. Ha, 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 ha. For the protection of the Latin Empire, the faithful shepherds stood on guard." The Latin Empire is the Roman Empire. That's the Holy Roman Empire. And it's saying they're the faithful shepherds of it.
and they're saying even the Pope lost his power. Well, yourself, it was infiltrated many, many times.
Yeah.
The Pope wasn't allowed to go to Versailles.
Yeah, that's
so
great
time of year, the actual year, what date this song we're talking, what Pope they were talking about.
Well, it's definitely not an Antichrist anthem. They're saying they are the faithful shepherds that protect the Holy Roman Empire. It's not an Antichrist anthem. So, yeah, I would question some of these people that say these things, because they, either they haven't actually looked into what they are putting forward as evidence, or they're deliberately just trying to mislead people by putting stuff in there that's in a different language. Next up, we've got one that I can answer. This is John Hammond. He says, "If you do a search for Jesus or Christianity in Mein Kampf, all that comes up is a pitiful Lord once in reference to the providence that Adolf received during World War One when he heard a voice that saved his life by telling him to run. If Jesus was a seminal part of his life, you would think he would have mentioned him repeatedly, but he does not," and he says "not" in capitals. Well, I did a podcast on this, and you can find it at the Radio Aryan site. It was the Daily Nationalist, and it's entitled "Hitler Was a Christian." And I took one chapter at random from Mein Kampf, which was 36 pages long, and I went through it, and there were at least 25 references to Christianity, Christian quotes from the Bible, basically using biblical language or using biblical parables or talking specifically about something in the Bible and using it as an allegory for today. But if you look up Christianity in the index in Mein Kampf, you'll find very little. But if you actually look at the words that he used and the things that he talked about, you would see that he was very, very well versed in Christianity and in the Bible, which is why there are 25 separate Christian quotes in these 36 pages. And this is why I say when the section in Table Talks, where supposedly Adolf Hitler talking disparagingly about Christianity, it makes no sense. Because the man writing in Table Talks knows very little about Christianity, and the man writing in Mein Kampf was so well read in it that he was able to transpose the words from the Bible, talking about time back then, to time today, and use it as allegories and parables, and to bring it into the modern age. He was obviously very, very well versed in the Bible. Anyway, that podcast I did on that, so that, you know, that's another proof that Hitler was a Christian.
Well, you attribute that to him wanting to be, at some stage, wanting to be an altar boy.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to be a priest, I thought, at one stage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. He was an altar boy, yeah. He wanted to be a priest, and his mother was a devout Roman Catholic, and he adored the ground that she walked on. So he's never going to go up to her and say, I'm a pagan, is he?
I think he mocked the people that were calling themselves pagans. I mean, how can you call yourself a pagan today? There's no continuation. In the tradition, there's no continuation in it at all. It's just fantasy in the last century.
In that previous video we were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, I missed this note. He mentions the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. He actually mentions, goes into great detail of this Westcott co-founder and all this. And if you check the list of occult orders that he closed down on one of my videos, there it is, Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn.
Oh, that'd be one of them, yeah. Aleister Crowley. And that's no similarity to the Greek Golden Dawn.
It's two
separate things. Well, again, this is people that are just uninformed, isn't it? Next one we've got Adam the Great. He says, hey, Dennis, I'm just trying to figure out the Vatican situation. Hitler was a Christian, yes, and also close to the Roman Catholic Church. I just have a hard time making a positive connection between the two, given the Vatican and the Jesuits' deep perversion of true Christianity and the Catholic Church's dark history, as well as their role in the overall deception and evil that exists in the world today. What is your take on this? Thanks in advance.
Yeah, well, I actually answered him in detail, really. People have to understand that they have to realise that the Catholic Church was infiltrated and has been infiltrated in this war against Freemasonry many times. And so there's certain times the Catholic Church will do something and people will just associate it carte blanche as the Catholic Church, when in fact at that moment in time, it wasn't the Catholic Church. Just like, as I just mentioned, the Pope was banned from Versailles for the peace conference. That's because at that point in that war, then it wasn't infiltrated. But obviously, after World War One, it was. And then when Hitler came to power, he would have kicked them all out again. And then after World War Two, Rothschilds take over again. And hence, you know, I think it was an Australian company who did a survey and came out with the statistics that it was during the 1960s that most of this paedophilia was taking place in the Catholic Church, which logically stems back to the takeover of Freemasonry after 1945. And obviously, not only are they blackening the face of the church, they're putting in their own people, and along comes Vatican II to destroy it from the inside. So consequently, you've got attacks on the outside, destroying it from the inside, to get to a point today where the Catholic Church is not the Catholic Church. It may have a sign on the door at the Vatican, but it's certainly not the Catholic Church. And whatever it does, people cannot associate that with the true Catholic Church.
Yeah, that's a good point to make. I mean, you want to look back into history. I mean, the church has gradually become more and more and more corrupted. And obviously, there was a time when it wasn't corrupted. And you want to look back at that. And again, this is why I say you can look at the Bible. We know that's not corrupted if you go to the earliest translations. So if you want to know what the original church was like, just read that. And he has another good point, I think, in the second comment that he makes. And he says, what about the Roman Catholic persecutions of Christians? It seems to me there's been a bit of a battle between Christianity and Catholicism since Christ. And I would say, well, the problem is that there was heresies. There was Jews trying to bring out spurious versions of Bible translations. There was Jews trying to encourage different sects that were teaching Gnostic teachings, that there was a lot of Jewish subversion of Christianity, and the Roman Catholic Church, or the Catholic Church before it became Roman Catholic even, did its best to prevent this, because they knew what would happen if it became subverted. I mean, if you look at it today, we have all these different denominations and nobody can really agree, and there really is only one truth, and they were trying to prevent that. And especially with the Bibles, when people will say, oh, the Roman Catholic Church tried to prevent people from having Bibles. But it wasn't that. They tried to prevent people from having different translations of the Bible that weren't translated correctly. And a lot of our English translations today, they get the words from Jews. You know, they ask the Jews to help them with the translation, which is like going to the devil and saying, can you help us translate our holy book? It's just... It's ridiculous. You've got to weigh things up evenly. I would suggest anyone that has questions about the Roman Catholic Church should read books by E. Michael Jones and check out his podcasts, because that will give you...
Well, just the very fact that they fought Freemasonry, although, you know, they look to be defeated at the moment, but they have fought it for longer than anybody.
E. Michael Jones will give you a much more balanced view, and then you can make your mind up, I think. And we've got final question here from Michael B1, and he actually sends you about 30 questions, which are really just a stream of logic. It really seems to me to be the various questions that he asked himself before coming to his final conclusion. And the long list, it's a long list of questions, but he appears to be asking which is better for a country, Protestantism or Orthodox Catholicism. It's hard to make out whether he means Orthodox or whether he means Catholic, and Orthodox and Catholic were both one church up until about the 10th century. And he's got a really good quote here from, who is it? Queen Maria Theresa, Queen of Hungary and Bohemia, Archduchess of Austria, wife of the Holy Roman Emperor. And this is said by her. Henceforth, no Jew, no matter under what name, will be allowed to remain here without my written permission. I know of no other troublesome pest within the state than this race, which impoverished the people by their fraud, usury, and moneylending, and commits all deeds which an honourable man despises. Subsequently, they have to be removed and excluded from here as much as possible. And that's a good example, I think, of the way that the Holy Roman Church looked at the Jews. You can go back as far back as to Constantine the Great, and he made laws banning Jews from marrying Christians, banning Jews from having Christian servants, banning Jews from holding public office, banning them from usury. It's always been the church that actually protected us from the Jews. And before then, the pagans, the Romans, they were all in really tight with them. You know, we had Roman emperors with Jewish mistresses. They were working together with Julian the Apostate. He worked with the Jews to try and attack Christianity. And it was only once the Roman Empire became Christian that it really did protect us from the Jews. And you can see from the writings of Alfred the Great in the 9th century, and there had been no Jews in Britain at all, and he translated parts of the Bible into Anglo-Saxon English, and in the introductions to the bits that he wrote, a lot of the time he wrote about the Jews, and warning us about what devils they were and what they did to Christ, the fact that they had tails and horns, you know, saying that they were devils, and the fact that the king was writing that and putting it into his translation of the Bible shows you how important it was and how, you know, what the teaching was in the church about Jews at the time. It was warning the Christian people about them. Unfortunately, the Jews came into Britain in 1066, but up until that point, we didn't actually have any. So he's making a point that the original church really did fight against them. And he says, go on, Dennis.
I'm just going to say the original church put them in ghettos.
Yeah, and made them wear pointy hats to identify them because we knew that they didn't look like us. Yeah, and there's another quote here, and he says, do you believe that Protestant countries will naturally extend to Jews and other non-believers religious freedoms and civic emancipation? And he has a quote here from Congress, and it says, true freedom embraces the Mohammedan and the Gentoo as well as the Christian religion. So what he is saying is that it's the original Orthodox Catholic Church that protects countries from Jews, and it's the modern Protestant version that allows them in. And I would say that, yeah, I think that's probably true. Although, you know, Christian identity, I wouldn't say that's Protestant or Catholic, because you could be Protestant or you could be Catholic. Christian identity is more a way of interpreting the Bible. And he said, finally, he says, would it be fair to say that the spiritual and secular struggles of the modern world can be summed up as a struggle between traditional Orthodox values, or the universal order, versus Judeo-Protestant values, or universal freedom? And I think, yeah, that's quite true. That's how he sums it up. That's it, Dennis. I think we've come to the end. Unless you want to say something. You got something else you want to say?
No, no. We can run one of them videos another time. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. We'll go into them maybe next week. We'll see if we can debunk them. Well, thanks for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Pleasure. We'll be back next Friday with another Truth Will Out Radio for you. And we do hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you.
Tuned in to